Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct. And I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 20th of February, the year 2020. And of course, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout Hudson County, throughout the Garden State, and of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. You can write the show's inbox at any time, folks, which is Politically Direct NJ at yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at Politically Direct NJ. Also, check out my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Of course, you'll appreciate all my Instagram stories, whether they're political memes, sports, pro wrestling, pop culture, anything and everything, really. I like to sort of expand upon my Instagram stories and appreciate all the likes and the brand new followers I get each and every day on Instagram. Don't forget to also look me up on Twitter, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. For all you Facebook subscribers, take a minute, go to the official page for Politically Direct, click the like button, and of course, tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Don't be shy. Call me toll free, 818-572-8032. Once again, our toll free number is 818-572-8032. We'll take some calls later in the show. Have a great guest coming up in just a few moments, so you don't want to go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And don't forget to check out Insider, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the city of New Jersey. Folks, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. It starts with our outstanding editor-in-chief, Max Lazzaro, of course, my other colleagues, really amazing columnists such as Fred Snowflake, Jay Lasseter, Al Sullivan, and so many others. You definitely want to check out their columns, folks. And once you check out the website, again, www.insidernj.com, upper right-hand corner, you will see the subscribe button at the very top. Click on it, and you're automatically enrolled in the Morning Intelligence Briefing. So to know all the scoops and all the latest news going on in the Garden State, folks, you'll get it every morning with your Morning Intelligence Briefing. So whether you're having a cup of coffee, having your breakfast, maybe you're on the treadmill, perhaps you're watching some of the morning political shows, or like me, you're watching some of the sports shows like Fox Sports, like I'm watching normally First Things First and then Undisputed. Whatever it is, I'm going through my inboxes. I'm sure you are too, on your smartphone, your tablet, PC, Mac, whatever. And guess what? Waiting right there for you will be the Morning Intelligence Briefing. So again, folks, check it out. Don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook, and also follow them on Twitter as well. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of the staff of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or sponsors. So again, ladies and gentlemen, we had a wonderful week. Obviously, we celebrate President's Day weekend. So hopefully you had a great long weekend. You got to enjoy the NBA All-Star Game. If you're a pro wrestling fan like me, you got to enjoy NXT TakeOver Portland, or just, you know, watching whatever was on TV. So a lot to talk about this week, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, the Nevada caucuses coming up this Saturday. A disaster of debate last night, I think we all know, on MSNBC. Very entertaining, to say the very least. And I'm sure, you know, you'll have plenty to, you know, discuss tonight. So call me again if you want to call in about the debate. What were your thoughts? Anything really in today's political climate? Again, toll free, 818-572-8032. Again, toll free number brought to you by Insider NJ. And folks, it got me thinking this week. As a matter of fact, this past Monday on President's Day, I had the privilege of once again being asked to make an appearance on Liquid Lunch, a wonderful news program that airs live Monday through Friday from 12 p.m. until 2 p.m. on most cable systems. If you have Newsmax TV, you can definitely check it out and see it for yourself. And it's, you know, really, again, I can't say enough about the wonderful staff there, and they're nice enough to have me on. I've been out literally the entire month of February, which has been great. I was actually on in January a couple times. And certainly I was on this past Monday. And again, if you're not familiar with Newsmax TV, you can check out your local cable systems, you know, on Cablevision channel 102, Fios channel 615. If you have Xfinity, it's channel 115. If you have DirecTV, it's channel 349. And if you have Time Warner Cable, it's channel 222. So again, you can catch Newsmax TV all day on those networks. You can also check it out on their website again, and also check them out on their Instagram and Twitter pages again, folks. And again, a shout out to John Tobacco, the host of Liquid Lunch, and also Frank Morano, one of the producers of the show, obviously. Nick Romano as well, the great production staff that I get to work with over there at Newsmax. They treat me like family over there. And it's, you know, I can go on there as often as I can whenever they need me to come in and make appearances and observations. And this past week, I was asked to appear on their Money Monday segment. And normally it's a show that's predicated on the economy or the markets. But, you know, it was President's Day, so the markets were closed. But doesn't mean we can't talk about money or sort of the aspects about money. And I went on Liquid Lunch this past Monday to talk about the idea of pending legislation that would indeed pull funds from states that give driver's licenses to illegals. And that's the subject tonight, folks, of my first shot. Now, again, as I mentioned, I was on Liquid Lunch this week on Monday and appeared for a segment there to talk about legislation that Republicans in the House and Senate introduced that would block federal funds from states that allow illegal immigrants to obtain driver's licenses. Of course, it's the latest move in an escalation concerning the fight over sanctuary laws. Now, as reported this past week on Fox News, also on the New York Times and the Associated Press, the Stop Greenlighting Driver Licenses for Illegal Immigrants Act would block funds to sanctuary states, which would limit local cooperation with federal immigration authorities and those that give licenses to illegal immigrants. Specifically, it would halt Justice Department grants, in particular those awarded under the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant. I know, that's a pretty long name. Which is a top source of federal criminal justice funding within the United States. Now, again, the legislation was introduced in the Senate by Republicans and certainly introduced in the House by fellow Republicans. And it's interesting because, you know, it reminds us that this is legislation that sort of defines the fight over sanctuary state legislation. Now, the Trump administration has been attempting to highlight attention to the dangers of this policy. And they've been shining a light on cases whereby, for example, illegals have killed Americans because of reckless sanctuary state policies. We've seen here in New Jersey, for example, that Governor Murphy, along with Attorney General Gabriel Gawal, did create a directive to make New Jersey a sanctuary state. And that just makes it harder for federal agencies such as ICE to work with local police departments and state agencies. It's really interesting, folks, because, and I talked about it on this program before, never mind the idea of sanctuary state policies, I just think are wrong. But obviously, whether it's New Jersey or New York or other states that have gone along and done this, the idea of giving driver's licenses to illegals, folks, is just wrong on so many levels. And I understand that there will be liberal advocates and left-wing activists in the state they'll talk about, well, Fernando, aren't you concerned about the roads? And it's a public safety issue. And they're already here. They're driving to work. They're taking their kids to school. They're working. They're paying taxes. They're contributing to our economy, Fernando. Why are you trying to be so punitive and harsh? I'm not trying to be those things, folks. My opposition to giving driver's licenses to illegals goes beyond anything that's racist or bigoted or xenophobic. It's not. Listen, I'm the son of immigrants. Give me a break. Okay, stop with your selective moral outrage that I get from so many liberals on my social media feeds about this. It's really just about the fact that we're rewarding people here illegally with the privilege of driving. Folks, driving is not a right, okay? It's not some fundamental right that's bestowed upon us. It's a privilege, okay? And if you don't follow the rules and you don't follow the parameters set forth by the New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission, then there are consequences. I understand that Democrats in Trenton, specifically liberals, were so adamant and jovial about the fact of both chambers, the legislature, both the Assembly and the Senate, and obviously was signed by Governor Murphy into law and should be taking effect in January of 2021. Well, folks, this is my problem with it. Again, number one, we're rewarding people that are here illegally with the privilege of driving. That shouldn't be happening. Now, for the sake of the legislation itself, and I'm not going to read the entire thing to you, but folks, this is what's going to happen. Now, again, under the new state law, people here who are here illegally will have to go through sort of the proper channels to obtain a driver's license. They'll have to go to the MVC. They'll have to take a written test, right? Then they will have to take a road test. And should they pass, then they'll have to, after obtaining their driver's licenses, they'll have to register their vehicle. And then they will have to insure it. And folks, and this is the problem. And under the new state law, obviously, whether it's companies like Geico, Progressive, Allstate, whatever, one of the things that really drives me crazy about this is the idea that once you have to register your vehicle and once you have to insure it, folks, there's no obligation whatsoever by these insurance companies here in the state to offer full coverage or is there any mandate by the state in terms of what has to be assigned? Listen, people who are here illegally and are going to register their vehicles and are going to go for insurance, obviously, most likely not going to have the best type of vehicles anyway. Secondly, they're not going to be able to afford probably a more expensive coverage. So what's going to happen is the insurance company at the bare minimum is just going to offer them collision. Okay. And what's going to happen, folks, let me put this perspective for you. And I know people, you know, I had Sue Altman on the show at the beginning of January. I had other like activists on the show saying to me that, oh, well, Fernando, this is, you know, hypothetical. No, it's not. I've talked to people that work in the insurance industry. Okay. And they've told me this verbatim. Okay. The idea that tomorrow if you're driving on Route 80, or if you're driving on Route 1 and 9, or you're driving on the Atlantic City Parkway, or guess what? Expressway, excuse me. Or you're just driving your local municipality. If you're driving, folks, and you get rear-ended by an illegal, okay, and hopefully there's not catastrophic damage to the car, hopefully no one's hurt, but if you suffer any damage to your vehicle, and you get out of the car and you talk to the person, obviously, and you determine, obviously, when you start exchanging information, right? Because normally when you get into an accident, normally you don't want to involve the insurance companies, right? In most instances, you want to just sort of fix the situation among the drivers, right? So when you are, you know, exchanging information, I mean, you'll know if someone's illegal here. You'll know. You'll know by their license, okay? Not by anything else. Don't take it. Don't get it twisted. Don't think that that's a racist statement just because of looking at someone. I don't want you to think that because that's not what I implied. So relax. But when you're exchanging information, you'll know. And guess what's going to happen? When you're looking at the insurance, they're most likely just because they really can't afford anything else, they'll mostly just have basic collision. Meanwhile, you'll have full coverage on your vehicle. And guess what? Let's say there's, I don't know, $3,000 worth of damage to your vehicle. Okay. The illegal that has collision on their vehicle probably only covers about maybe $500 to $1,000 of the damage. Well, guess what? Guess who has to put forth the other amount? It's going to be you. And guess what happens? Your premium goes up. So the idea about driver's licenses to illegals being this wonderful idea, again, it's just, it never ceases to amaze me how liberals in this state can concoct some of the most asinine policies because they think it's, you know, because remember, folks, liberals are all about, you know, feel-good policies. They don't ever really sort of put forth commonsensical ideas because it's about feeling good. It's about, oh, doing the nice thing for people or, you know, being humane. Folks, I'm all about humanity, but I'm about sound policy. So when the Trump administration, the attorney general, wants to deny federal funding to states that offer, you know, driver's licenses to illegals like they do here in New Jersey, good for the federal government. That's within their providence. That's called federal law. And the problem is that with the federal government looking to deny federal funding, you know what's going to happen? Governor Murphy, in his infinite wisdom, is going to say, well, we're lacking that revenue or we're lacking that funding from the federal government. Guess what we're going to do to make up for it? We're going to raise your taxes. And again, folks, let's be honest. Governor Murphy's never met a tax he's never liked. So it's not like raising taxes isn't something that's already in his DNA. So, folks, again, it just seems like this back and forth between the federal government and this back and forth between Governor Murphy and Attorney General Gabriel Gruwal is just going to keep on going and going. And again, it's exacerbated by irresponsible policies, such as I said, giving driver's licenses to illegals, to also creating sanctuary state policies, right? And it's just perpetuating this awful political climate, folks. And I'm, again, and say what you want. And if you tell me I'm like sort of like not being, intellectually honest, that's not true. There's two things on this show you can always depend on me for. I'm being intellectually honest and philosophically consistent. And when you look at this, when you look at the federal government looking to deny states, all right, federal funds because of this irresponsible policy, you know what? Good. Good for the federal government. Good for the Trump administration. And that doesn't make me a homer. It doesn't make me a Trumper or whatever else. It makes me someone that believes in sound policy. Folks, I'm an academic. Okay. I'm not about feel good. Okay. I'm about sound fiscal policy. I'm about sound governing. And guess what? That's not happening here in New Jersey. And I really wish that Governor Murphy and Attorney General Gruwal would get that message. And if they don't get it now, they're certainly going to get it because it might come in the form of a quick, swift kick in the you-know-where by the Attorney General of the United States and the President of the United States. And that, folks, is my first shot right here on Politically Direct. Again, ladies and gentlemen, 818-572-8032, toll-free number tonight. I'll take some calls way later in the show. Again, our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And joining me now here at 915, she is the New Jersey Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News and a very reputable journalist. You'll get to see her a lot on Reporters Roundtable on NJTV. Folks, please welcome back to the program here tonight my colleague in the field of journalism, the great Stacey Sherman, joins us tonight on Politically Direct. Stacey, what's going on?
Not much. How are you tonight?
Good, good. I want to give you a really nice intro. I like to do that for my guests. I like to sort of hype you up. You know, I'm a big pro wrestling fan, so I believe in the grandeur of a big hype entrance and announcement. So I hope you like that one this evening. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Busy day.
It certainly was. And Stacey, one of the things I want to cover with you today, I know that it came up recently. I know you made an appearance on Reporters Roundtable, and I don't know how often you read Insider NJ. I hope you do. I mean, I'm a little biased, obviously, because I work for Insider. So not sure exactly if you read our material too often. I know you're very busy in terms of the great writing that you and reporting that you do. But I really want to get your thoughts. I know a couple of days ago it came out, not just via Insider, but I know it was reported on a few different news outlets here in the state. The name Katie Brennan certainly elicits a lot of different responses in the state, Stacey. And, this week, via her attorney, Katie Brennan laid out what she believes are some sound policy reform recommendations to address sexual violence and harassment in New Jersey politics. I know it was reported this week it was a 7-page document that was submitted via her attorney, Catherine McClure, from Smith & Eibler, LLC, down in Central Jersey. She's been kind of dormant for a while, but it seems like Katie Brennan is out in the open now to really have her voice heard. I think she's become a symbol, a lot of what's been discussed in New Jersey politics when it comes to the new committee that's going to be led by Senator Weinberg, but really just reminding us about how the problem of sexual assault and harassment in the workplace and sexual misconduct is real here in the Garden State. So I want to get your thoughts on that.
Sure. I think Katie Brennan wants to be part of this movement. She was the start of this when she came forward with her story and made accusations against Governor Murphy's staff member. We have not heard from her in a while, but now Senator Weinberg has this committee and people are coming forward with their stories. And I think she wants to be a part of that. It's a movement that is bringing forth a lot of a lot of stories, a lot of ideas for how to make things better. And I mean, her document, I do read Insider NJ, and I did see the document on your website, and I did not read the whole thing. I looked through it, but she is covering all the bases. You know, I think, will all these points get passed? I doubt it. You know, she's covering things that need to be done in the courts and things that would need to be done in, you know, in other parts of government, legislature, and in business. And she wants to make sure that this never happens, what she alleges happened, never happens again.
And let me tell you, again, in this committee that will be headed by State Senator Loretta Weinberg out of Bergen County, I mean, it's a pretty long name. I mean, try saying this five times, you know, fast. You know, the Work Group on Harassment, Assault, and Misogyny in New Jersey Politics. I mean, that's a really long name, Stacey. My goodness. I'm sorry?
No, you will never hear me say that name. I'm all about short names, so I'll just call the committee.
I'm really surprised it wasn't like an acronym or a shorter nickname for it. I mean, it just seems easier. But really the point, Stacey, and I look at, you know, and we'll get to the sort of the makeup of the committee in a moment, because that's also raised some questions and some concerns statewide about the makeup of the committee. But it seems like for a lot of people that I talk to, and certainly your sources are better than mine, Stacey, but it seems like while on the surface, this is a really worthwhile project. I think that, you know, I'm someone, for example, who knows Katie Brennan personally. I know about her story. I've read transcripts, obviously, not just from the hearings in Trenton. I've read other documents as well that were made public early last year at the onset of her hearing. You know, when it came to testifying before the legislature, and certainly a lot of the details that, you know, comprise her time working for the Murphy campaign, and certainly in 2017, obviously what was alleged, and to this day, you know, there's still a lot of ambiguity there. You know, I look at someone like Katie, and I believe her. Again, that's just my personal preference and opinion. I don't try to impose that on anybody. You know, but it seems like on the surface, this committee is very worthwhile, but there are a lot of concerns, at least from people I talk to, off the record, that statewide, while it's great to sort of bring these stories out into light and get testimony and to try to put forth some policy reform, a lot of people remain skeptical, Stacey, about whether or not this committee can really make a dent. And what a lot of people are alleging is a really toxic climate for women in politics here in New Jersey and in government. Have you heard the same thing?
I have. I mean, there is a toxic climate for women in a lot of places. I mean, New Jersey government is no exception. You know, we cover business, and the Me Too movement is not just happening in New Jersey. It's happened, you know, everywhere, not even just in the country. It's happening all around the world. I think women are speaking up, and they want their voices heard, and the old days of, you know, of touching a woman while you're talking to her or making, you know, comments and saying, oh, I was just kidding, that those days are over. And you are definitely in New Jersey with, you know, in politics and in the state house. It's I think gone on for far too long. And it's, you can say, okay, I'm sorry that happened, it won't happen again. But until you really get to the thick of it and really understand how prevalent this is, you know, nothing is really going to change.
Listen, that's a fair observation. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:25 here on the East Coast. And joining me tonight is the Trenton Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, the great Stacey Sherman, joins us tonight here on Politically Direct. Stacey, and it's funny, you know, we're sort of talking about this now because obviously coming up at the end of the month is the chamber train ride, correct, down to D.C.
Yeah.
And that's been one of the, I think, big talking points about the toxicity that can exist for women in New Jersey, right, that either work in government or are part of, the, you know, the endeavor on, you know, the train ride down to D.C. The chamber event is always one of the more popular events during the year. Obviously, later on this year in November, We have the League of Municipalities Conference in Atlantic City, which I love going to. And that also has raised concerns, right, in recent years about the fact that, you know, these are two, like, of the staple events here in New Jersey. And there have been a lot of women that have sort of quietly gone about trying to share their stories about how uncomfortable it is and how unsettling, unsettling the train ride is for the Commerce Trip or the League of Municipalities. And it seems like, like you just mentioned right now, it's about trying to raise awareness about a very serious issue. But it's almost always also, at least from people I talk to, that, hey, you know what, this committee, you know, the heart's in the right place and their intentions are good, but it seems like this problem has grown too out of control that even with policy recommendations, it can't really be fixed. I think that sounds kind of cynical, but I'm always the eternal optimist. How do you view it?
I view it as I think it is, there will definitely be changes. Even if there's not a policy change, things are already different, I think. I think that women are being heard. I think that people are seeing the effects of what can happen. They're listening more. And they're taking steps. Even the Walk to Washington, which is a wonderful event. I've been on the train several times. It's good for journalists. It's good for lobbyists and politicians to really get a chance to just talk. I've seen other things happen on that train, but it's not the fault of, you know, the chamber or anything. But even so, they are taking steps to minimize the drinking, which I think is a big contributor to what happens. So I think already things are changing. So I don't know if a law or a policy is going to do it, but I think women speaking up and women, you know, and men realizing they can't do the things that they used to do, there's already changes going on.
No, absolutely, and you're right about that. And I mean, again, not to put you on the spot, Stacey, but at any point in time when you've taken the train ride, for example, I mean, have you ever felt uncomfortable? I mean, I'm sure it can be unsettling for a lot of your colleagues and the female ones especially, that sometimes they're nervous about what these trips represent and potentially, you know, how uncomfortable it could be or awkward. Have you ever felt that sort of awkwardness, you know, riding down in the train down to D.C. During the chamber event? And if so, like, I mean, listen, I've met you, and you're a tough lady, and you look like a stone cold killer. So I don't foresee you having any problems.
I am. Yeah.
I know you are, definitely, and I give you props for that. But have you ever felt recently or at all ever any awkwardness or discomfort in taking that train ride down there?
I have not. I have seen people that I think to myself, wow, they have had way too much to drink. I have seen looks, and I've seen people standing a little closer than they should. You know, I'm working on the train, so I don't drink on the train. So I could see things differently than people that are drinking on a train. And, you know, I've seen little things. I've never seen anything very blatant. And if I was involved in something, I would, as you said, I'm a tough chick, and I would definitely speak up and say something. So it's a tough situation, you know. But I think I definitely think the drinking has been out of control at these events. So you get like politicians and lobbyists together, and that's what happens.
Well, and it's interesting because I know that one of the biggest vocal advocates about sort of maybe cleaning up the chamber ride or the League of Municipalities, for example, has been State Senate President Steve Sweeney. I know that he's talked about not attending these events in a way, like, I guess maybe it's his way of boycotting them or taking a stand against them. Again, I think some people have looked at that action by Senate President Sweeney as maybe just window dressing. Again, I don't know if you've heard the same things. But I've heard people tell me that maybe the senator's looking to take a stand on this, and he's hoping that other people will sort of follow his lead throughout the legislature. Have you heard the same things, perhaps?
I heard that he won't be on the train, and I heard that others will. You know, for about 10 minutes, I thought to myself, not safe. This was weeks ago when I was, and then as a journalist, I'm like, I'm definitely going. I want to see, you know, who goes and what they have to say. So for journalists, I'm definitely going. And even Senator Weinberg this week said that she had made plans, other plans for transportation, but she encouraged people to go. I'm not sure boycotting it is, I don't know, the way to go. They are taking steps. The chambers said, you know, it's going to be a safer ride, and I think you got to give them the benefit of the doubt because the benefits of the event are, you know, there are benefits to going and being on that train.
Sure. No, absolutely. And again, I mean, we'll see what happens in the weeks and months ahead, though, Stacey, as it pertains to the committee under the direction of State Senator Weinberg. We will see how much sort of additional input Katie Brennan's going to have here, whether or not she'll be asked to come and testify. I know that the hearings are going to be public concerning this work group, again, led by State Senator Weinberg. We'll see. I mean, not to give a spoiler out here, but to my audience tonight, but I have been in contact with Katie Brennan's attorneys. We've been talking feverishly. I'm trying to get Katie and her attorney on the phone for an interview for the show in the coming weeks. So I tell my audience, stay tuned. If I get that scoop, which I'm confident I will, I think people will be very interested to hear Katie Brennan's. I think they'll be interested in her narrative for sure coming up. And hopefully, Stacey, you'll want to tune into that once I announce it officially. So now moving
absolutely
on to the state. Yeah, it should definitely be a good one for sure. So moving on to some state stuff here. You know, Stacey, it's the end of February, and it is budget season. And without a doubt, obviously, while it hasn't really made a lot of headlines yet, I'm sure that the usual tension that exists between Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin, State Senate President Steve Sweeney, and Governor Phil Murphy will continue. I tell this to my audience all the time, and I say this to my students all the time in the poli-sci courses I teach. And, you know, just because there's a D next to your name, Stacey, does not mean that one size fits all in the Democratic Party. And I think here in New Jersey, Stacey, fundamentally speaking, I think there is a large ideological divide between the governor and really his biggest opponent. And it's not a Republican, it's a fellow Democrat, and it's State Senate President Steve Sweeney. It's budget season. What are you hearing right now about maybe what are the most pressing things in the budget, perhaps? And, you know, do you think that this relationship between the governor and the state Senate president is reparable in any way?
Well, let me start by saying that I've been around a long time, and I've never seen the Democratic divide in Jersey this much. It seemed that when there was a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature, a lot more got done. But the Democratic Party itself is going through a lot, both in New Jersey and nationally, about where they want to be. And do they want to be moderate? Do they want to be progressive? And in New Jersey, it's a little more specific, this battle between the, I guess you can kind of say, like the North and the South, or the Murphyites and the Sweeneyites. It's been going on even before Murphy was governor, I would say, and it's taken its toll. Things that, you know, Murphy promised to get done have not gotten done, including where do we start? The marijuana legislation. His millionaire's tax, things like that. The tax incentive program is, I believe, frozen while they argue over how much tax breaks and who should get the tax breaks and things like that. And this Murphy-Sweeney battle, I don't think is going to be resolved, you know, before the budget. I think it'll continue through the budget season.
You know, you're right about that. And it's interesting you bring up marijuana, because obviously A little over, you know, a little less than a year ago, we were looking at, you know, in March of 2019, the legislature possibly bringing up a motion to vote on marijuana legalization. It didn't pass. Obviously, there weren't enough votes in either chamber of the legislature. And I know that was a staple issue for governor, for then candidate Murphy, Stacey, back in the fall of 2017 when he was running for governor. And very much like the minimum wage was another staple issue for him. I mean, think about it. For something like the minimum wage, which I would argue would probably be easier to sort of iron out from a policy perspective, it still took almost a full calendar year to get done. And it only got done because it was laid out during the lame duck session of the legislature in December of 2018. So literally the governor took office January of 2018, a full calendar year almost passed, and the minimum wage just barely got, you know, organized and settled. And it's still, you know, again, we're not going to see $15 in New Jersey until 2024. And in the meantime, obviously, you know, property taxes, which are the highest in the nation, are going to continue to go up. Spending in Trenton is still going to increase. You know, the governor, whenever he can tax something, you know, if it's not nailed to the floor or if it's breathing, you know, believe me, it's taxable. It seems like this is sort of following the governor around. And, you know, last year when they didn't have the votes, State Senate President Sweeney went on record and said, well, we'll just put it on a referendum. And it seemed like they were just sort of passing the buck to New Jerseyans like you and I. And let's be honest, Stacey, as if we don't have enough to worry about this November, right, on the ballot, right? Like when you walk in there and close the curtain, right? Like we don't have enough to worry about and think about. Then sort of like looking downwards in the voting booth, right, the referendum there, and we're going to read it, blah, blah. And a lot of New Jerseyans don't read, you know, referendums often. And I tell my students all the time, I'm like, guys, here's a newsflash. There's a good chance that New Jerseyans are going to vote and become, I believe, the 12th state in the country to legalize marijuana recreationally. Do me a favor. When you vote, however you decide to vote, don't forget, the very next morning, it doesn't mean you can just start lighting up, okay? So, folks, newsflash, you know, don't think about just getting high the very next day after Election Day. It doesn't work that way. The legislature is going to have to iron out the details should it pass. So, yeah, on the morning of November 4th, Stacey, it seems like, yeah, New Jersey might see marijuana being legalized, but it just seems like Trenton can't get their act together, Stacey. And I could see all of 2021 just being invested in trying to sort this out, whether it's expungements, whether it's about, you know, the taxation. It just seems like the legislature can't get out of their own way. And with something that they could have worked on and really help alleviate the strain on our criminal justice system, it just seems like, you know, let's just pass the buck. Let's let New Jerseyans vote on it. But then, you know, at the end of the day, though, Stacey, the legislature's gonna have to figure out how to go about this, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, marijuana, I mean, just like the minimum wage, nothing is as simple as it seems. And I think Governor Murphy has learned that that's his biggest lesson in his first term, or, you know, I don't know if he's going to be seeking or will get another term. So the biggest lesson is that, oh yeah, I want a minimum wage. We're going to get it passed. Well, it's going to take a while because, you know, there's lobbyists and there's opponents and you're going to have to compromise. And they did compromise with the phase in. Marijuana, it's not just, yay, we like marijuana. Let's pass it. Done. There are so many different parts to marijuana. They got one part passed, right? They got the decriminalization passed, but then there's expungement. Then there's taxation. Not only they have to determine how, you know, what rate to tax, they have to determine where that money goes, whether it's going to, you know, go towards you know, social justice or safety or some other program. And then there's how they're going to regulate it. So there's so much to figure out, and they could not get it done. And you are right. I mean, they're going to put it to voters. There's a good chance it's going to pass because you just ask the majority of voters in New Jersey want, you know, a support marijuana legalization. They don't have to worry about really the details. They just have to say whether, you know, yes or no, they support it. So it'll get passed, but all the other details will still have to get figured out. One other point I just want to make is going to the voters is something that Sweeney is talking about more and making constitutional amendments because he could not get, the bill he wanted passed. It's kind of a slippery slope. You don't want to keep amending your constitution. It's there for a reason. But this is his way. He tried it other ways. And so this is his way of getting it passed. I don't know, how people will feel about that. If he keeps, how many things are going to be on the ballot because Senator Sweeney could not get it passed. Governor Murphy is what I wonder.
No, listen, you're right about that. And one of the things that really upsets me about this entire scenario, Stacey, is the, again, before I was in academia, now, I worked in our criminal justice system for 10 years. So I saw firsthand working in jails in both Hudson County and Essex County, again, the effect and the impact about marijuana-related arrests. And there was a disturbing number last year. I think I might have read in Bloomberg News, as a matter of fact, where there were over 14,000 marijuana-related arrests in New Jersey. And that translated to something like one arrest every 29 minutes. Like, that's unacceptable. Like, the idea that black and brown people continue to get incarcerated at, like, this ridiculous rate, when we all know that, again, and this is the academic in me talking, like, the research tells us conclusively from either studies, focus groups, Stacey, on a national level, white people smoke marijuana comparably at the same rate as their black and brown counterparts. But black and brown people face harsher sentences in our criminal justice system. And it just seems like, especially here in New Jersey, being so densely populated, knowing how pervasive this problem is, why can't the legislature just pull up their pants like adults, sit there, and work on this? Because guess what? In the meantime, municipalities, whether it's up here in Hudson County or where you live, I'm not sure what county you live in, but wherever it is, those municipal prosecutors are still going to prosecute people. We're still going to send them to jail, and we're still exerting resources that could be better used for more serious offenders. And it just seems like the legislature is just complicit in sitting there and letting this cycle continue. And I'll be honest with you, this is one of the reasons I think people hate government in Trenton, Stacey, because it just seems like they just want to sit in their ass and just wait for things to sort of marinate naturally. No, you sometimes have to get off your ass and go put forth policy that makes sense and helps New Jerseyans. That's not happening in Trenton, Stacey, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not going to give my opinion on that. I do think it is a difficult thing to get past, and they have realized that, and so pretty much they have punted on that. But there still are other things that they are going to need to get done. They can't legalize without. It won't be legal until they figure out all those other issues. So you are right. They have to, they have to step forward and start figuring this out. But it comes down also to the Murphy Sweeney tension, because they have to get together and agree. And I don't think they get together very much.
I agree with that. And again, as I told my students, in a discussion that too, I said, listen, guys, like I said, it's going to be up to you and I when we go to the ballot box, and we're going to decide whether or not on Tuesday, November 3rd. I mean, we'll be deciding a lot of things, obviously, but one of them here in New Jersey, obviously, is whether or not to legalize marijuana. And as I told them, I'm like, do me a favor. Don't just think that the next morning, when the clock strikes midnight, Wednesday, November 4th, hey, guess what? We get the light up in New Jersey. That's not the case. So folks, do me a favor. Please keep that in mind, obviously. The legislature is going to have to get it together with the governor and work on something, take us into 2021. And Stacey, I got to say, obviously, I know that the weekend that the president was in South Jersey to lend his support for Congressman Jeff Van Drew, the new Republican, right, in New Jersey, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were that Friday, I think after the president was in Wildwood on Tuesday, I remember you appearing on Reporters Roundtable with Michael Aaron, great show. I love Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember all of you talking about sort of the impact that had. And it, you know, one of the people in attendance at that rally was one of the first people to declare his candidacy to oppose Governor Murphy. And that was former Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli. And I don't know what sources tell you, Stacey, but statewide, it seems like Jack, and I've had him on this show before, he's a nice guy, he's a gentleman with me, he's been on the show a couple times, and it seems like I think he learned his lesson from 2017. Like, he didn't get into the race soon enough. I think he waited too long to get into it and eventually try to challenge then-Lieutenant Governor Kim Cordano. He ended up coming up a little bit short in the primary. I think, again, by his own words on this program, he even said that, you know, I'm not trying to Monday morning quarterback this, but, yeah, I could have gotten into this sooner. It seems like Jack Cittarelli is full steam ahead, and he's been out there. Social media has been strong, his presence out there online. He's been going to events all over the state, and I don't think he's missed an opportunity to really kind of put himself out there in the forefront. You talk to people a lot more than I do. Are you hearing anything that maybe someone's going to step up and challenge Jack Cittarelli, or is Jack Cittarelli going to be the, sort of the preeminent front runner on the Republican ticket to challenge Governor Murphy?
I have not heard whether there will be more Republicans. It is, you know, still soon. The election's not till 2021. Am I right?
Sure.
I did talk about how I was kind of surprised that he, Jack Cittarelli, rallied behind Trump, because last time he ran, he was not a Trumper, but I think that Republicans have realized that being that they need to coalesce. Like I was talking about, the Democrats are very far apart, and the strategy is to get behind one candidate. That's nationally. I don't know if that is what the New Jersey Republicans will do as well. I have not heard of another Republican. That doesn't mean there isn't or aren't other Republicans. I think in New Jersey, it's rare, you know, for a Democrat to get reelected, if I'm correct. Republicans do have a chance with Trump staying popular, even though not in New Jersey. He lost some favor in New Jersey, but the rally itself, I was very well attended. I mean, doesn't mean that that was all New Jersey people, but Trump has a base, and it seems like it's getting bigger, not smaller, no matter what he does.
No, you're right about that. And the reason I mentioned Jack Cittarelli is because I think it was a couple months ago that Essex County Executive DiVincenzo came out and endorsed the governor. So I think for all intents and purposes, though, Stacey, I think any shred of hope that South Jersey Democrats, specifically Steve Sweeney, had in maybe wanting to primary Governor Murphy next June in 2021, I think, again, that just this is from what I hear, it seems like that went by the wayside once DiVincenzo kind of put his name out there and his neck out there and endorsed Murphy. Did you hear the same thing?
I did not, and I'm skeptical of that. I still ask myself, like, why is Sweeney distinguishing himself so much from Murphy? And he has since day one. And I don't know. Just something tells me, why would he go through all this if he's just going to sit back and let Murphy be the candidate? So I think it's early. I think we'll see what happens. The budget is coming up, and that's really important. And Sweeney's got time, and other Democrats, I think, are interested. So we'll see how it goes.
No, listen, you're absolutely right about that. Folks, if you just joined us right now, it's 9:50 here on the East Coast on Blog Talk Radio. Dynamite Lady tonight joining us after a long day, a very late, laborious day, to say the least, for her. She is the Trenton Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, the great Stacey Sherman, joining us tonight here on Political Direct for a few more minutes, so I appreciate her time. Stacey, again, getting back to the budget, aside from marijuana legalization, which, again, we're not going to be looking at until the end of the year with the ballot referendum, and, of course, I think that'll be an issue for 2021, you know, really in the legislature and what's going to happen. But leading up to the budget this year, right, which is mandated by state law that has to be passed and signed by the governor before midnight, June 30th, what are some of the bigger talking points that you're hearing about? Again, and we all know that there's that tension between Governor Murphy and State Senate President Sweeney. It seems like for whatever reason, the governor, while he's a nice guy and I've met him and, you know, he's the type of guy you want to have a beer with, he doesn't seem to be the politician that Chris Christie was. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a Chris Christie fan. I've had a lot of issues with Chris Christie. Other than being a fellow Dallas Cowboy fan, there really isn't a lot I can think about highly about Governor Christie. So, you know, the fact that we love America's team, that's about it. I really don't have much more in common with governor, with the former governor. But it seems like Governor Murphy just isn't the politician I think that Governor Christie was. And I think Governor Murphy is kind of maybe falling into that trap that sort of swallowed up John Corzine in 2009. You know, a private sector guy that came in, not a lot of government experience, if not none at all. And I think it came back to bite him. I don't know. Again, during this budget season, what do you think probably is going to stand out between the governor and the legislature about getting this budget done? And, you know, as taxpayers, you know, how concerned, not necessarily are you, but how concerned should taxpayers be about what this budget could bring?
Well, I would hope, or I think the first two budgets, there was not a lot of communication between the legislative branch and the executive branch. Not as much as there have been in past years. Now, it's hard to tell that because our state house is closed for renovations, and it used to be that the reporters would camp right outside the governor's office and see the legislators walking right in. But from what we have heard, that the governor and I think last year they barely talked until the legislature presented the governor with where in past years, I mean, they're chatting from the beginning. And so it's, I would think if there's any chance that the governor gets what he wants, there would be more communication. The big ticket item is always taxes with Governor Murphy. And I think that what is this, the third year? And I don't think he's going to get this millionaire's tax. I have no doubt. I would be willing to bet that there will be another millionaire's tax and that the legislature will not go for it. So that's, I mean, really, the number one thing on New Jerseyans' minds. And, you know, you said not as a taxpayer, but I am a taxpayer. My taxes
of course.
Big, you know. Just saying that it does affect me. You know, we're journalists, but we're also, you know, taxpayers. But the number one issue when I'm out to dinner or out with friends, everyone's talking about their taxes. It's just too much. So I've heard Governor Murphy's, you know, speeches about, you know, people would be fine with their taxes if they got more for their taxes, but I just think people are not really willing to pay more.
Listen, I'm with you. And again, as a fellow homeowner and taxpayer, Stacey, like I feel suffocated, property taxes in the country. It seems like the governor and the legislature cannot get on the same page about this. And I'm sure it's something that's going to be on the minds of, you know, of them as they're sitting down, eventually trying to talk this out. And again, as mandated by state law, trying to get a budget passed that's going to be beneficial for New Jerseyans. I don't know about you, Stacey. I'm not holding my breath, but again, I'm the eternal optimist, and, you know, maybe the legislature and Governor Murphy will turn around and maybe give us a little bit of a relief. Again, I'm not counting on it, but again, we'll find out. Stacey, real quick, before I let you go, a couple of things here. It is 2020, certainly election season. And here in New Jersey, obviously the junior senator, Cory Booker, after a very disappointing showing during his run for president, I think a lot of people in New Jersey, while state committee people or state or county chairs or state chair, you know, John Curry, were very much in the corner of Cory Booker, as was Governor Murphy. Let's be honest. And again, this is not being malicious or trying to kick somebody while they're down. It seemed at times that Cory Booker had a very uninspiring campaign. He just did. He struggled to raise money. I think he struggled to distance himself or differentiate himself, excuse me, from other Democrats in the field. And obviously it showed he decided to suspend his campaign in January to sort of focus his energies on winning another term. You know, New Jersey has not elected a Republican to the United States Senate since 1972. It seems like Cory Booker statewide has a lot of support. I don't know if anyone is going to challenge him in a primary. I've heard some names in the Democratic field, some advocates, activists that maybe want to run. Maybe don't think that Cory Booker is progressive enough. I don't know. I don't know what Republican is going to step up to challenge Cory Booker. Any names you're hearing that we should keep an eye on?
Honestly, I haven't heard any names yet, but I would be surprised. I think Cory ran a good campaign. He was out raised, and you know, he had some troubles really making his message strong. And but I think as a senator, he has support. And, you know, definitely in New Jersey where he needs it, he has a lot of support. I think he has a good chance of, you know, winning re-election.
I would agree with you. Again, New Jersey's been safely blue for some time. As I said, New Jersey's now elected a Republican to the United States Senate since 1972. So I don't see that trend changing. But in the congressional races, though, aside from Jeff Van Drew, which I'm sure that race is going to be very closely watched. As a matter of fact, I had one of his potential opponents, Democratic candidate Bridget Harrison, on the show a few weeks ago. I'm not sure if you heard that episode of mine. If you didn't, I hope you will at some point when you
I
have time.
I did not.
It was a really good episode. She was on for over an hour with me. So it was a really, really good episode. When you have a chance, I hope you check it out. But whether it's Bridget Harrison or other Democrats that are going to look to try to win the primary in June and challenge Jeff Van Drew, obviously, with the president's visit, he's put a bullseye on himself for obvious reasons, obviously switching parties, certainly, you know, declaring, you know, his unwavering support for the president, where before he wouldn't have done that. Obviously, that congressional race is one to watch. Any other races statewide that maybe will be interesting? Or do you feel the incumbents such as Andy Kim or Mikey Sherrill look relatively to be safe? Is anybody vulnerable, you think, in these upcoming congressional races?
I think Van Drew. We just have to go back. I think that the Mikey and Sherrill and Andy Kim are. I think they're safe. I think the one to watch is Van Drew. I am curious. You know, he's in a Republican district, a Republican leaning district. He was he got in, but I mean, a lot of the people that voted him in, well, he was voted in as a Democrat, and now he's a Republican, and I'm curious how people feel about that. I don't know if it will convince them to, you know, vote for a Democrat. I mean, it's a Republican-leaning district, so even the Democrats, you know, aren't your super Democrat. You know, they don't lean super left or liberal. So they're more moderate Democrats. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I know the name Bridget Harrison for years and years. I don't know if she is well known outside of like the political circuit. So I'm going to be watching that one really closely. It's very interesting.
No, I agree with you. And again, I had Bridget on for over an hour. It was a really good episode. And you know, so I think she has a really good shot, you know, and I don't just say that because I know Bridget personally. I've worked at Montclair State University before working now at Bergen Community College as a faculty member full time. But, you know, she has a lot to offer. We'll see. I think you can tell she's one of these academics that's, you know, like a lifelong Jersey resident, a homeowner, a taxpayer. They're concerned, you know, they want to sort of put forth a candidacy. And you know, she had a lot to say about Jeff Van Drew. I mean, I think Jeff, I'm with you. I think Van Drew is very vulnerable. That part of South Jersey certainly has always been maybe a little purple or maybe more conservative in recent years. We'll see if that plays to the favor of Jeff Van Drew. Again, we'll certainly find out as it sort of continues on here in the election season. Stacey, before I let you go, again, you've been just a dynamite sport tonight. I know you've had a long day, and I appreciate the time you've taken to come on the show tonight. I wish you – listen, I feel I could talk to you for 3 hours on this show and not get through everything. I mean, that's how I think – that's how much the wealth of information I think you bring to this show. So I'm really grateful that you took the time to be a guest tonight. But you are a journalist, and, you know, I would argue that for some time – and I think this sort of predates maybe the president, but it seems like we've been living in sort of a time of tribalism within our political climate. And I think it's really impacted journalism, I think, very hard in the sense of, you know, I think regular everyday Americans have grown skeptical of the mainstream media, whether it's print media or online media. And whenever you hear the president or just in general, I think it's not just the president, I think, whether it's conservative circles or social media or anything in general, there seems to be this sort of mindset or narrative out there about like, oh, the liberal media and, oh, give me a break. The media leans so far left and it's never fair or consistent or accurate. And never mind the fake news moniker. I mean, even before that became a popular hashtag, you know, in the Twitterverse or anything, it seems like maybe regular everyday Americans have grown cynical of media. And as a journalist, and being a really reputable journalist like you are, how does that make you feel when you read these sort of comments on social media or you see the institution of journalism sort of just sort of being attacked consistently?
I see the cynicism and I understand it because the world of journalism has changed in my 25 years of journalism. I mean, when I started, I was at a newspaper, and we got the Sunday paper, and people bought the paper, and that's not the way it is now, and they get their news online. And online, it is so easy to say you're a journalist when you are not a journalist. And people read what they, you know, stuff on Facebook and they believe it. And I have had arguments with my husband sitting at the, when, during the last election, he would read stuff off of Facebook. And I would say, you're married to a journalist. What are you reading? And that is not news. And, I believe in, you know, in journalism. It's why I'm, you know, I get out and I talk and I appear on Reporters Roundtable. I believe, you know, that we serve an incredibly important purpose, and without us, the public would only know one side of the story, and you need to be an informed person, and I feel that we play a very big role in democracy. I'm very, very proud of being a journalist, and people can say what they want, but I know what good we do. I know how many great journalists there are in New Jersey and around the world, and how they've been vilified and killed and jailed, and they are trying to do a public service. So I hope this fake news thing goes away. I understand why it's around, but there are true journalists out there doing what they're supposed to be doing, asking tough questions and not just writing what, you know, the president wants you to write, but challenging that. And I think that's what they're supposed to do.
You know what? Hear, hear. Bravo to you, Stacey, for saying that. I'm with you. I applaud the good work that you do. Again, before I let you go, I want to thank you for your time. Once again, I think we've had a really productive discussion. I think it's been entertaining. I think it's been informative tonight. I hope you've enjoyed your experience once again here on Politically Direct, and consider it to be a reputable, you know, podcast and news program. Again, it's more opinion-based because of me, but I hope that you enjoy your time here. And again, I'm always glad you're very receptive when I reach out that you want to do the show. And you're a stand-up person, absolutely, for doing it. Before I let you go, this is the time of the show where I've been the one asking questions, Stacey. I'm kind of the one leading the narrative here a little bit. Young lady, the floor is yours. You got a question for me? You want to pick my brain? What you got for me?
Oh, my. On the spot. You did this to me last time, and I didn't have a question. I don't have a question. I'm sorry. I'm not prepared. What do you got going on for the weekend? What's happening?
Well, again, you know, just working on some new guests, really for the show coming up. As I said to you during the segment earlier, you know, talking to Katie Brennan's legal counsel. I mean, that's been my mission for the last few days, and I'm really trying to sort of work on this heavily for the next week. I really want to be able to get Katie on along with her attorney. You know, I think it's such a worthwhile episode to have. I think it'll be one of those exclusives that people are going to want to listen into. And again, you know, I'm very fortunate that I work under the Insider NJ umbrella. So, you know, that helps sell the show in itself. And I'm hoping for that. I mean, I've also been in contact with the press secretary for the governor. I mean, a lot of people might think it's a pipe dream, but I don't think it is. I'm determined to get the governor on this spring. So I'm hoping to get him on. And there's a lot to talk about, Stacey. I mean, again, whether it's the budget, whether it's the fact that, and I talked about it during my opening monologue, I mean, clearly the governor and Attorney General Grewal are at odds with the president and Attorney General Bill Barr and the Justice Department about sanctuary state laws, about some of the legislation that's been passed here. That's not going away. I think that the governor's made a point to sort of be defiant of federal law, and I think the federal government's looking to, you know, kind of punch back. And I really want to get the governor on, and I'm confident I can do that this spring and you know, have him, you know, come on the show. And, you know, I'm fair and balanced here. I know that that moniker belongs to somebody else, so I don't want to get sued. But what I try to do on this show, Stacey, consistently, is just be fair and balanced and just ask tough questions, but be fair. So, yeah, I'm really much, you know, fixed on just, you know, booking guests and getting those guests that people want to hear from. And I think in this election cycle, Stacey, there is no shortage of things to talk about.
It's exciting time.
Yes, definitely. So I want to thank you for your time, Stacey. Keep up the good work. And by the way, I don't know if I'll have you on again before the month of May. I hope to. But if I do not, I want to wish you a happy Mother's Day in advance. And keep up the great work with Bloomberg. Yeah, and keep up the great work with Bloomberg News, okay?
Thanks so much. Take care.
All right. Have a good night. All right, folks. 10:05 here on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. What a great interview tonight with the Trenton Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, Stacey Sherman. Again, you know, listen, I think we covered a lot of topics tonight and really got to the heart of what's going on in Jersey politics. I think that we, you know, hit on a couple of different angles, you know, certainly the Katie Brennan story, the possible policy recommendations that are coming forward with the committee by State Senator Loretta Weinberg out of Bergen County. We'll find out exactly what impact it's going to have on policy reform here in the state. Certainly the ongoing tension between the governor and State Senate President Steve Sweeney, and we covered that much, much more. So if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, at the bottom of the hour, you'll be able to download the episode from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. You can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Again, www.insidernj.com/podcasts. And again, I can't say enough about my guest this evening, the New Jersey Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, Stacey Sherman. Again, you can check out Stacey on the Bloomberg site. And certainly you can just Google her. Also follow her on Twitter when you can. And listen, you can check her out on Reporters Roundtable. She's a regular with Michael Aaron. And again, I'm not just saying this because she's a guest on the show tonight, but I read her work often and I've seen her appearances on, you know, on shows throughout the state. And listen, you know, she's as good as it gets in journalism here in the state of New Jersey, folks. And if you don't read Stacey Sherman's work, I suggest you start doing that. Again, as I said, she's a wealth of information, so you definitely want to check her out, you know, as often as you can via her job with Bloomberg News. Folks, again, you know, really a great episode tonight. And certainly we'll have some great guests coming up in the coming weeks ahead, so you definitely want to stay tuned for that. If you missed any part of the broadcast, go to www.insidernj.com/podcast and download the episode. Share it on your social media. Tell your friends about it. And I hope that you'll do that on a consistent basis. If you have a suggestion for a topic or a possible guest, folks, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Certainly, I answer my emails promptly. I love to hear from you, the people, about the show, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. Again, I've been fortunate to be on the air now with Insider NJ and my partnership for 2 years now, and it's a great, great experience. I work with some great people. Certainly a shout-out to my boss, Pete Onelia, who puts up with a lot of my stuff, to say the very least. You know, I'm sure there are some things I say on the air that makes him nervous, makes him cringe, but the one thing I can say that I'm very grateful for is the consistent support and reinforcement that I get from him. And, you know, if you didn't like the show, and also a shout out to the Graham family for their overwhelming support of the show. And again, folks, I'll say, you know, I can't say it enough. You know, if the show wasn't any good, believe me, the Graham family and my boss, Peter Nellia, would not waste a nickel on this program. So the fact that they do, and the fact that they believe in my brand of journalism and my work says a lot about them, and really I'm grateful to them. So I can't say it enough here on the podcast. Again, folks, for the absolute best journalism, check out www.insidernj.com. On the upper right-hand corner, you will see the subscribe button. Click on it, and you're automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're checking your email during breakfast, you'll see it right there in your inbox, the morning intelligence briefing. And again, the best journalism, I would argue, anywhere in the state of New Jersey. So if you're not enrolled in it, please do so. And check out, again, their great columns. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Rich Pizarro, and certainly my fellow teammates in the lineup, Al Sullivan, certainly Fred Snowflack, and Jay Lasser, and many, many more. So I'm great to be part of the starting lineup for Insider NJ. Again, folks, don't forget to like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. And, again, don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, if you wish to follow the show on Instagram, please do so at PoliticallyDirectNJ. Also, follow me on Instagram as well at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Brand new followers, tons of likes, tons of clicks. Hey, I appreciate that, because without you, the fans, and you, the people, the show would not be possible. So, again, thank you for that. And don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. And, folks, again, you know, every Thursday night live at 9 p.m., you can listen to the best analysis and commentary about everything going on in New Jersey politics. And it's always right here on Politically Direct. Again, you'll be able to download the episode in its entirety tonight with Bloomberg New Jersey Bureau Chief Stacey Sherman. Again, at the bottom of the hour, again, www.insidernj.com/podcast. And whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, folks, walking your dog, doing your laundry, for my students, studying for their midterms coming up, right? You better study, because I'm not going to make the exam very easy. So hopefully you've been taking notes and doing your readings with the textbook. So, you know, when you're doing that and you need a break, go right here, tune in, trust me, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, it's real, it's here, it is Politically Direct. Good night, Trenton, New Jersey, to all my good people in the capital city here in the Garden State. Tune in tonight here on Blog Talk Radio, also on nj.com/podcast. Hey, love you all. Really, I appreciate the support here on the podcast. And again, see you next week here live at 9 p.m. Folks, again, please party responsibly. Be careful out there, Uber or Lyft it whenever and wherever you can. Enjoy yourselves. Again, the second half of the NBA season begins tonight. Certainly, spring training begins this weekend. My Yankees with their first game Saturday, 1 o'clock on the YES Network against the Toronto Blue Jays. Let's hopefully get the 2020 season off to a positive start. Not really happy about what I'm hearing so far with some injuries potentially to the Yankees, but we'll hopefully find out. But again, folks, have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next week here live once again at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time next Thursday night. And I'll see you next week, folks, here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.